Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon and welcome to this afternoon's edition of Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Beach and I'm filling in for Al Cresta. I'm one of the radio hosts here at Ave Maria Radio. I host Unveiling the Covenants, a program that talks about the fatherly love of God from every page in the Bible, in sacred scripture. Today on Cresta in the Afternoon, we will be talking about how Marxism has penetrated even the work of the pharmacist, that we are now called to dispense things from the pharmacy counter through a Marxist lens, and in particular through the lens of LGBTQ plus cultural competency training. This was published in a recent article in the Journal of the American Pharmacists Association. So we'll be talking with Brendan Purdy about that. And then after that, we will talk about moving forward. We're going to meet the man behind Two Men in a Truck, the great moving organization. It's one of the largest moving companies in the country right now. And one of its co-founders, Brig Sauber, is a devout Catholic, and he will share the correlationship between the work that he does and the faith that he professes. Today being the feast of St. Joseph the Worker, we need to remember that this was a man who encapsulated true courage in terms of the practice of his fatherhood. The notion of manly courage and fortitude is all but lost in a secularist culture, with a narrative that constantly pushes for men to adopt more and more feminine attributes. The notion of being non-confrontative, even in the face of great evil. The notion of kowtowing to allowing women to take on leadership roles, even to their own detriment, and even to the desire of not providing for and protecting the women and children in our lives. In the face of this, Saint Joseph, who models this great capacity to defend and protect and care for Jesus and Mary, calls us, especially men, to do the same. We have to remember that God trusted Joseph, and God trusted Joseph with the Son of God, with his own Son. Christ came to the world in a state of great vulnerability, and Joseph provided Mary and Jesus with the defense, the protection, the care, and the strength necessary to become the Holy Family. So let's model our Holy Father, Saint Joseph, and let's think about that as we take a look at the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, May 1st. It's the Feast of St. Joseph the Worker. Today's news brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds. More information at AveMariaFunds.com. Pro-Palestinian protests on college campuses across the country are intensifying. In Los Angeles, police swept through the UCLA campus overnight and said they were asked by the school to restore order as violence was breaking out between anti-war and pro-Israeli demonstrators.
There are people getting injured, and the police officers left their post. They were here, they left. The security has abandoned this encampment.
Classes were canceled today. Fireworks and pepper spray went off into the crowd as demonstrators supporting Palestinians and Israel clashed. In New York, protesters have been cleared off the grounds of Columbia University, where over 300 were arrested. The Arizona State Senate has repealed a Civil War-era abortion ban. Two Republicans joined Democrats to pass the proposal. The 1864 law that banned nearly all abortions was revived by the state Supreme Court last month. The bill now heads to Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs' desk to be signed. Pope Francis's prayer intention for the month of May is for the formation of men and women religious and for seminarians. The Holy Father pointing out that formation does not end at a certain moment, but continues throughout life, integrating the person intellectually, humanly, effectively, and spiritually. The United Methodist Church is repealing its ban on LGBTQ clergy. Delegates voting overwhelmingly in favor of the reversal during a meeting Wednesday in Charlotte, North Carolina. They also voted to prevent local leaders from being able to punish clergy and churches for holding same-sex weddings. More votes on LGBTQ issues are expected later this week at the meeting. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter, filling in for Al Cresta. A recent article in the Journal of the American Pharmacists Association addresses a need for pharmacists to have quote-unquote LGBTQ plus cultural competency training to help them promote inclusion, embrace diversity, and advocate for justice to advance health equity. We're joined by Brendan Patrick Purdy, who is a philosophically minded mathematician and data scientist who lives in Ventura County, California. His Twitter handle is Brendan Navigator. All one word, Brendan Navigator. Brendan, how are you doing?
Good, Marcus. Thanks for having me.
So the joy is completely ours, but I must say that I wish we had something more heartening to speak about. This is quite frankly ridiculous. So paint us a broad stroke picture here. What's going on?
So the broad stroke picture is that pharmacists and pharmacy technicians in California have to do 30 hours of continuing education for every 2 years to renew their license. Mm-hmm. That's totally fair. We want them to keep learning about the best practices to help their patients, about new drugs, about new therapies.
Right.
But then toward the end of last year, it was decided by the infamous, at this point, California legislature, that at least one of those 30 hours is mandated to be about, as the news report was just saying, about people who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, ad infinitum. And so this is worrisome for a number of reasons. One, it's taking away an hour of the continuing education that should be about drugs and making it about the latest fad. And it's also impinging on the right of conscience of those pharmacists and pharmacy technicians who are being forced to learn about a topic they don't necessarily agree with or what is trying to tell them. And third, I mean, it's just insulting to pharmacists and pharmacy technicians that the state is saying, oh, yeah, you treat these patients not as well as your other patients. So we need to make sure you have this extra training so you treat this special group appropriately. So it's insulting to the pharmacist because there's no data at all that pharmacy technicians have been treating any of their patients differently based on race, sex, gender, or anything else.
Right, and therein lies the problem. You're talking about pharmacists here. These are people who are data-driven individuals. The entire enterprise hinges upon working through the data from studies that they've received, and these are supposedly done well, right? We're talking about double-blind peer review studies. And in light of that, you've got California Assembly Bill 2194 that's now even caused the oath of pharmacists to be updated and adopted. So tell us what the oath includes now and how that's going to affect the way they work.
Yeah, so the oath now says, before is fairly similar to the Hippocratic Oath, but now it has this added sentence, I will promote inclusion, embrace diversity, and advocate for diversity to advance health equity. And, like a lot of these things, in some sense, it's complete nonsense. What does it even mean to say, I will promote inclusion, embrace diversity, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I could say that, and, you know, I don't know what it means, and so I'm not doing it. But on the other hand, it's dangerous, particularly the last bit, of advocate for diversity to advance health equity. And that's the one of the tricks of verbiage that has happened over the last 5-10 years. We used to speak of being equal before the law. Right?
That's right.
And now it's equity, and it might just seem, this word just sounds nicer, and we're going to say equity now. But it is not a synonym with equality. Equality means that we all should be treated the same as mm-hmm. pharmacists, treat all the patients the same. Equity means the good old Orwellian line, and, you know, I always try to avoid Orwell because everyone says them, quotes them, but here you have to. Some animals are more...
more equal than others.
Yeah, more equal, more special than others. In this case, there are certain groups that pharmacists are supposed to be on the lookout for to make sure they're treating those individuals with special treatment. And of course, I'm saying the word individuals here. The problem is it's actually, instead of treating patients as individuals, it's telling pharmacists you need to treat patients as what group they are in.
That's right.
Like, are they, oh, if they're this in this box, and most pharmacists probably don't know, and if they do know, they don't care, right? They're just there to help their patient as Joe or Marcus or Brendan, right? And everything else is irrelevant to the practice. But this is saying, oh, you need to be on the lookout. If you think they're in one of these groups, which is seems kind of like you're being taught to have some bias there. Oh, this person is acting a certain way. Then you need to treat them in a certain way.
Right.
And then you're not treating all of your patients equally, but that's what is meant by equity.
And the entire enterprise of not only pharmaceutical practice, right, but you think about the constitutional reality that enshrines the operation of this nation that allows for equal sight in the eyes of the law and therefore equal opportunity towards medical advances and medical treatment. That the whole purpose of that is because the premise is all men are created equal. The premise is that everyone has the right to claim these things that are necessary for the flourishing of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, what we've done now is, well, what is being done by this law here is that, as you mentioned, a particular group and their interests have been advanced above the rest under the guise of the desire for equity and inclusion and anti-racism. But the fact of the matter is you've now tipped the scales in favor of. The balance is no longer in order.
Yeah, and another aspect, I didn't get to this article. I get in trouble with my editors in a good way if I wander around too bit. Too much, but a lot of hospitals and healthcare entities, they now will do pregnancy tests for everybody. And you're like, well, that's insane. And it is insane, but they...
I didn't have the words. I apologize. Go on.
And they don't want to get in trouble. They don't want to misgender someone. But there are certain drugs which literally, if a pharmacist who's pregnant touches the drug, they could have a miscarriage. So if someone is identifying in a certain way, you need to be sure what their biological sex is versus their gender is.
Right.
And of course, it's also true with certain ethnicities have a greater likelihood of certain diseases, sickle cell anemia or whatever. And so, and it's always like this struggle between this is so ridiculous. Okay, you do your hour and we move on to our lives. And yeah, that's part of it because, you know, the pharmacists and pharmacy technicians do need to keep their jobs. But on the other hand, it's also insidious, and it has a tendency to start going into other places where it's like, wait, we're wasting all this money on giving people who there's no way they could ever be pregnant, but just in the name of equity, we're going to make sure that someone gets a pregnancy test.
Right. And it's absurd. It is as absurd as allowing biological men access to OBGYN doctors, when in fact there are women out there who genuinely need to be on the list of being able to see those doctors. And you deprive those who really need that care in the interest of facilitating, in this case, a sociopolitical ideology. Now, as is highlighted here, the fact of the matter is CCRT, this critical cultural revolution theory, it's demonstrating that as opposed to the Marxist class conflict ideology, we've now taken labor as a category out of the picture and replaced it with culture or race or, in this case, whatever group you belong to. So it's not so much about labor anymore, but it definitely is about the group identification. So Marxist ideology has really permeated, in this case, the practice of the pharmaceutical sciences.
Yeah, and I'll say it's unfortunate. There's UCLA Medical School. There was news came out recently that they, there was a Marxist talk for their medical students and the like. And so it's, there's going to be a vacuum, right? So, I mean, if you have whatever was intended by, I thought it was in the Constitution, but the Jeffersonian separation of church and state, and there was a fairly good understanding of what that meant for many years, and then somehow in the 70s or 80s, they went from a separation of church and state where they coexisted to the removal of religion from public life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but the government has then decided, well, we can't have this religion anymore. So we're going, those in power are going to impose their own religion, which is this new version of, a more recent version of Marxism, right? So Marx is saying that religion is the opiate of the masses, which he was primarily upset because people were religious and they didn't want to be Marxist.
Right.
But what Mark, I think unintentionally perhaps, what he was pointing out was that he wanted the government to be the opium of the masses. Mm-hmm. And religious people, by believing in something higher than the government, by believing that they are not of this world, right, that we cannot be put in that same box. And so that's why governments for years now, any sort of totalitarian tendency, I'm not saying America is totalitarian, but any of these totalitarian tendencies that there are, is because those that are in charge are not happy, are not pleased that there's independent thinkers who don't aren't going by with the fashion of the day.
That's right. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because the fact of the matter is, ascribing to CRT, or in this case CCRT, is just to make that distinction, CRT would be critical race theory, and CCRT is kind of the broader picture, critical cultural revolution theory, but they ostensibly mean the same thing. Ascribing to that is ascribing to a totalitarian ideology. Now, this being imposed upon the practice of the pharmaceutical sciences, how is that going to impact what we are going to see in, you know, the practice of pharmaceutical medicine in terms of the care of the everyday patient?
So starting at one extreme, so I did highlight at the beginning and highlighted in the article that if 1 hour is mandated of the 30, but you could actually do all 30 of your hours on this sort of training. Now, to be fair, at the moment, there's probably maybe 5 hours total you could take that are approved by the Board of Pharmacy. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that will, there'll be continuing more and more hours offered. So most immediately, as I was saying at the beginning, is that when our pharmacists and pharmacy technicians are taking their continuing education, they have at least 1 hour, and some will choose to do more than 1 hour on Marxism rather than on pharmacy practice. And that's just fundamentally dangerous. You see when you're watching TV and you get the pharmaceutical ads nonstop,
right?
There's all these new amazing drugs all the time. And I always say, ask your pharmacist, ask your doctor about this. And so we all have a finite number of time on this planet, and we all have a finite number of time to study for our job. And so the state is mandating that some of that time is taken away, and it becomes a distraction from actually helping patients and treating them as individuals who are in the image of God, and rather putting them in some box.
Brendan, I'd love to continue the conversation, because there are also ramifications towards the private religious practices of the pharmacists involved. But we don't have time right now. I've been talking to Brendan Purdy, a philosophically minded mathematician and data scientist who lives in Ventura County, California, on Marxist ideology permeating the pharmacy counter. I'm Marcus Peter.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Isn't it awesome that we today do not recognize his presence in the Eucharist? Is it because we really don't go to him in humbleness of heart and say, Lord, I don't believe, help my unbelief. Lord, I want to see you. I want to recognize you. I cannot live without you. Are we saying that?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
How is the priestly prayer of Jesus unique in the economy of salvation? According to the Catholic Catechism, it is unique because it reveals the ever-present prayer of Jesus and at the same time contains what Jesus teaches us about our prayer to our Father. As Jesus fulfills his Father's plan of love, he gives us a glimpse of the depth of his filial prayer when he agonizes in the garden, Abba, not my will, but thine. His last words on the cross exhibit prayer and gift of self as one when he says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Later, with a loud cry, he surrenders his spirit. All the troubles for all times, states the Catechism, of humanity enslaved by sin and death, all the petitions and intercessions of salvation history are summed up in this cry of the incarnate Word. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Acton University is not your typical conference. Taking place from June 24th to 27th in beautiful Grand Rapids, Michigan, each day is packed with thought-provoking presentations on the intellectual and practical foundations of a free society. Bringing together world leaders in business, academia, and the church, Acton University is a conference dedicated to connecting moral and religious principles to economic and personal liberty. More information at university.acton.org.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter, filling in for Al Cresta. Two Men and a Truck. Many of us are familiar with the brand. It's one of the largest moving companies in the country now, with franchises in 46 states. The co-founder, Brig Sorber, once believed that wealth was the true key to happiness. He powered his way to financial success, only to find it an empty and shapeless place. After a heavy bout of despair, Brig turned to his faith, his Catholic faith, which had been shelved like a dusty old book, and he joins us with his story. The story is out of his book, Moving Forward, A Stickman's Journey for Hope and Meaning. Brig penned this book, and it was published by Forefront Books. And it has a large picture of two men in a truck. So when I first saw it, I really thought it was a book about the business operations. So, Brig, how are you doing?
Good, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. Thank you for joining us on the program. I read the book with quite a lot of pleasure. It's a pretty easy read, but you're very clear about how at different phases there was a kind of compass drawing you to true north. So maybe start with the childhood of your faith that you once had before we talk about the building of the empire.
Well, yeah, I really didn't have a faith. I mean, my parents were hardworking. We only went to church maybe a handful of times. And and so really it was just kind of watching how my parents, how hard they worked. They really instilled the work ethic into us kids. But there really wasn't a faith aspect to our family. And, looking back on it, it was like missing a front tooth. You know, it would have really helped. My parents did divorce when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And I really felt that the God that was out there was a God we had to prove ourselves to. It was a God that rained hellfire on bad people.
Right.
It was somebody that I had to gain his love. And so that was kind of what my mindset was, because as you get older and you don't have that faith backing, you backfill that in with what you think God is. And, I didn't really... And that's really what this book is about, is finding that once I realized, oh, no, God loves you for who you are, that's when it started to change. And that's when I started to, my life changed. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. Could this change our business? And that's what the book is about.
So you talk about how you had a rather pivotal encounter with, in this case, your grandfather, who was such a crucial influence in the kind of man you have chosen to become. So talk about him.
He was great. He was he was basically a tax assessor, but he was a farmer first, that was his hobby. He didn't golf. He didn't do a lot of things, but he gardened and he had like a little mini farm. And being a kid, he just made it a very adventurous place. He also gave me the time and would listen and talk to me. He wasn't very faith backed, but he was a very solid man. And I just saw how he worked. I saw how he befriended people. People liked him. He was very strong in the community, and it was something that I gravitated to. And I don't know, to this day, I mean, I still think about him all the time. I remember when he died, I would say young, 69 years old. He died of cancer. He was a smoker. Mm-hmm. And I just, the amount of people that were at his funeral were from all walks of life. And I really realized that, you know, to be successful in the world, you know, don't count your dollars. Maybe you should count your friends and how many lives you impact. And you don't have to be wealthy to do that.
Right. And Brig, like you mentioned, he taught you how to put others first, that life becomes hollow and empty.
Yeah.
So yeah, just share about how that has influenced your own life right now and the networks you've built it with people.
Yeah. What I really found out was, and since it's true in business too, a lot of people will look at businesses, they'll look at CEOs, large businesses, and just think, oh, they're all about the money. He really taught me that, you know what, invest in people. And I watched him do that. I learned from him. And as I started growing, even in the small jobs that I had, it's like God has made all of us adventurous. God is adventurous. He made us adventurous. We need to be sure that the people that are working with us and work for us can also exercise that adventurous muscle. You know what I mean? And so that is really one way how we grew Two Men in a Truck was, I graduated with a geography degree from Northern Michigan University. Mm-hmm. And then that I ended up being a president and CEO of a multi-million dollar company. But I surrounded myself with smarter people than me. I knew where my true north was. That's where I was taking the company. But I allowed these smarter people to sit in a room with me. I tell them where we want to go, get their ideas, they weren't a cog in the machine. They were part of the adventure of the business.
Right.
And I initially learned that from my grandpa, but then it took on more and more. And many of your listeners, too, would probably agree with me. You may have had a boss that was absolutely horrible. I did. I had a boss that was horrible. He would just embarrass people. He would shout at people. Mm-hmm. But what I learned was sometimes to become a boss, to become a leader, learn from those that aren't, that are not good at it, and take a look at it. Well, how would you do things different? And that was a game that I would play with him. And I actually, I'll tell you right now, Mark, I think I learned more from him to be a good boss than I did from a lot of really good bosses, if that makes sense.
Yep, it does. For the same reason that, it's a bad analogy, but there's an accuracy here. For the same reason that people who've had, say, bad fathers or mothers, they'll learn how not to be a father or mother that way. And therefore, they then ascribe to the very same virtues that they wish they had seen in their own parents. So that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yes, and it can go the other way, too. We can mimic that, and then sometimes in families, you'll see where that gets passed, almost like an evil spirit, right?
Right, right.
From generation to generation, but we all have choices that we can make, and I could have went that route as well as many of the listeners, but you look at it and go, no, I don't want to be that way. I know what it feels like to have somebody not treat you well and not respect you and not respect your thoughts, and it's like, no, I didn't like that. I don't want to do that to anybody else. That was just one of the ways I think that, you know, that we actually grew that company, Two Men in a Truck.
So, you you worked very hard, not only on Two Men in a Truck as an organization eventually, but even prior to that, you worked very hard on yourself. You talk about certain experiences you had at Northern Michigan in speech classes that mm-hmm. you had to take. So just it's a pretty intriguing story. So share about how all of that was formative to the person you've become today.
Oh, my gosh, Mark. Just one example. I was deathly afraid of public speaking and just absolutely horrified about it. And I was taking in my geography classes, I was taking, actually got an urban planning land use regulation degree, which is in the geography department.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was this urban planning. It was, you know, one of the things was look, you have to public speak. You are going to be public speaking to government officials and to many different people. And so part of this is public speaking. So 60% of your grade is going to be based on your, you know, you have to give a presentation from the class. My class was like six people. I mean, it was small. And I got up there and I absolutely froze. It was an absolute nightmare. And I froze. I couldn't do it. I almost passed out. My professor, who was awesome, he pulled me in his class and he goes, you know, you're going to get an F, right? And I said, yeah, I just can't do this. And he goes, well, buck up because you have to. I mean, you eventually have to public speak. He said, I will give you a D in the class. I want you to take the class next year, but I want you to take a public speaking class. And
that's gut-wrenching.
It was gut-wrenching. Oh, and it was, but I did learn a lot in the public speaking, and a lot of people think, oh, you're probably great when you got out of that. Oh, no, I was still scared of that.
Mm.
And it was important to me, especially being the president, eventually, you know, the president and CEO, I had to public speak in front of a lot of people. And so I knew I had to do it. And when we start doing something over and over, and my mom told me this a long time ago, when you ever get a chance to public speak, do it, because it's always practice. And anything in life is repetition over and over mm-hmm. again. And pretty soon you get over it. And like, I've got, I think, 5 talks in the next 5 weeks around the country. And I finally got to the point where I'm not losing sleep over that. I actually enjoy public speaking. I cannot believe I just said that, but I am.
I was going to ask you if you did anymore.
It's the pain in the neck now. It's the travel, but I thank God about that all the time. And I thank God that, you know, it's one of those things I pray about when I public speak, that I, you know, it's not about me. It's not about my ego. It's about getting information to people that, mm-hmm. that can be useful to them. And I think that's what helped me, was stop thinking that everyone's looking at you and everyone's judging you.
Right.
Start thinking about when you're standing up there, they're looking for information that you have. Give it. And right. that helped me too a lot.
Right. You know. And I was actually going to ask you exactly that, because anyone who speaks to you now, especially if they see any of your talks, none of them would think, gosh, this man struggled with public speaking at some point. So,
oh, and it was. And I'll tell you what, even when I would speak, and I do a lot of prayer breakfasts, but I travel around the country speaking to Legatus forums mm-hmm. and Catholic business groups. And I'd always, up until 2 years ago, I'd say, okay, look, I'm not a professional speaker. You'll have to deal with it, you know. and enough people went up and told me, stop saying that. You actually are a very good speaker. And, you know, I do use a lot of humor, and I try to land the plane and not, you know, talk for too long. But then finally I looked in the mirror and went, you know what, that God has worked with me, and he's made me a respectable public speaker. Quit saying you're not.
Yeah.
You know, and my wife told me that too. Oh my gosh, Brig, when I hear you speak, would you quit saying that? I'm like, it was kind of like a lifeline. Like, well, if I'm bad, at least I told him I was.
But you know, it's time for a wake up call when it comes from your bride.
Oh, yeah. After 38 years, she's right. Her batting average is very high.
Well, thank you, Brig. We're going to continue this conversation with Brig Sorber, who is one of the members of the founding family of Two Men and a Truck International, based in Lansing, Michigan. He worked his way up, being the first of two movers alongside his brother, John, and now he is president and CEO of the largest franchise moving company in North America and a prolific public speaker, as we just established. Stay tuned as we continue this conversation. I'm Marcus Peter, filling in for Al Cresta on Cresta in the Afternoon.
program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart-friendly, ride-your-bike-everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort-style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at avemaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Acton University is not your typical conference. Taking place from June 24th to 27th in beautiful Grand Rapids, Michigan, each day is packed with thought-provoking presentations on the intellectual and practical foundations of a free society. Bringing together world leaders in business, academia, and the church, Acton University is a conference dedicated to connecting moral and religious principles to economic and personal liberty. More information at university.acton.org.
60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa.
Within the people of life and the people for life, that's who we are. The people of life and the people for life. Part of our self-identity. The family has a decisive responsibility. This responsibility flows from its very nature as a community of life and love, founded upon marriage and from its mission to guard, reveal, and communicate love. The family and marriage has a mission to guard love, to protect it from false forms of love, from false uses of people, using people and abusing them. It also is to reveal love and communicate love. This is part of the family's and marriage's purpose. You reveal love to the world. You know, people say, oh, marriage is just a piece of paper. That's baloney. This is you saying to the public, I'm loving my wife and my husband and my children till death do us part.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
John chapter 11, verses 21 to 26. This is the story of Lazarus. Lazarus has died. Lazarus is one of his best friends. Just before this passage, we hear the news that Martha and Mary send word to Jesus that the one you love is sick. And the next line in the scripture is, now because Jesus loved Martha and Mary and Lazarus, he stayed where he was. His friend's in need, he can heal, they've seen him heal before, and yet somehow because he loves him, he stays, and Lazarus dies. And then Jesus shows up 3 days later and is greeted by Martha and Mary, who confront him with the words, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would never have died. Rather applicable for many of us in our lives. We ask the Lord to do one thing because we're certain it is what we think is best, when in fact he has something which far surpasses what we ask for. The challenge is, in waiting for that to happen, we go through very trying times, which oftentimes makes us wonder, does he really care?
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter, filling in for Al Cresta. We are continuing our conversation with Brig Sorber, part of the founding family of Two Men in a Truck International, based in Lansing, Michigan. And when we last left off, Brig was talking about all the growth he underwent during his time in college in Northern Michigan University. And in particular, with regards to his career, right now, part of his career being an avid public speaker. But Brig, I also want to touch on this lovely story of your, first of all, your courtship with Fran, and then that defining moment that led you both to embrace the reality that you're going to get married, and now how she stood beside you through all of the deep waters of all of your endeavors to this point today.
Yes. Well, when Fran and I started going out, Fran is number 12 out of 14 kids from a blue-collar Catholic family in the Upper Peninsula of Northern Michigan. And so Fran was the only one of those 14 kids that actually went to and graduated from college. All of them hardworking, but Fran, it was very important for her to go to college, and she put herself through college. And I watched her do that. I was more of a, you know, my college was more or less paid for, but Fran's wasn't. And I watched her hold 2 to 3 jobs, get fantastic grades. And I felt, man, this girl has some moxie, you know. I like this. And we hit it off. And now I want to tell all your listeners, everything you're listening to, my wife gave me permission to talk about. We took our relationship a little bit too far. Fran ends up, it's all in the book, Fran ends up getting pregnant and tells me that there's no need for you to marry me. I'm going to have this child. Everyone's going to try to talk me out of it. I am going to have it no matter what. And you don't have to marry me. I'll be fine. And I fell in love with her even more. I know a lot of people that have taken that open door and left. My faith wasn't strong. If she wanted an abortion, I'm gonna tell your listeners straight out, I probably would have drove her there. I just didn't know any better. But watching her conviction was absolutely amazing. And I pleaded with her to marry me, and she did. And then she ended up raising 2 kids, me and the baby. but that's kind of where my faith began, was watching Fran and watching her strength. And we were broke, and the book is, I think your listeners would really enjoy just the hardships of getting married, having a baby when you're 22 years old. We both did graduate from college. I worked several, you know, when I graduated, there was a major recession. Mm-hmm. Jobs were hard to find. And
in 86, yeah.
Yeah, Fran had to stay home, we just wanted her to watch Alicia, our daughter, and I went to work. I went from 170 pounds down to 140 pounds one summer, just from all that work. But the way that I looked at this, Marcus, was that in my mind, if it's going to be, it's up to me, and God helps those who help themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, and those aren't biblical sayings, but I kind of thought they were. And I really looked at it as wealth is freedom. We had to have public assistance to have Alicia. We just didn't have any money. My family didn't come from money. And so it's like, and my book goes into great detail about that. It was very, very hard for me. And I thought that will never happen again. And so my goal was to make money and to get freedom. And that's what I did. And we were grinders. And the stories that they'll read in there, they'll get a kick out of them. I enjoyed writing those because it gives me a chance to look back and thank God how he elevated me and took care of me and my family. But it wasn't, he didn't make it easy.
Right.
We still had to grind, but to get, you know, to move the story forward, you know, with 2 men in the truck, Fran and I started our own 2 men in the truck franchise in Marquette, Michigan, which mm-hmm. was the smallest one there was. It was successful. We had 1 and 2 trucks, and then my mom and my sister Melanie were growing the franchise, and they asked me to come down and start helping. So I went down there and just kind of worked my way up. You know, I worked in franchise sales. I was a franchise business consultant. I traveled around and visited the franchises, helped them build their businesses. I became a vice president to my sister Melanie, who was a president. Then I became the president, then the president and CEO.
Mm-hmm.
But I finally got to a point where, oh my gosh, we're not hand to mouth anymore. We have money. And I really felt that I had made it. And it was like, and you have to understand this, after going from hand to mouth for so long, and all of a sudden you've got money. You know, I had a nice home. I had an in-ground swimming pool. I drove an Audi. I was like, I made it. And then what happened was my world fell apart, because once I had all that, it's like, is this it?
Mm.
Is this it? And a wave of just despair came over me. And it was, I wouldn't wish this on anybody. It was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to see a doctor, and he went, "Oh, you have depression." He gave me pills for depression, and I went, "No, I don't think so. I'm not taking those." And right. I and depression's real. I know people have had it. It's a right. chemical imbalance. It's like, but Mark, how can you?
Your problem wasn't just neurochemical.
No, it was an emptiness, and
yeah.
and looking back on it. A lot of people come to Christ for many different reasons. A lot of times when they've hit rock bottom, they don't know where they're going to go, they will come to Christ. And I just want to say this, any way that you go to Christ is good. I don't care how you get there. But I think God looked at me and went, this isn't going to work for him. I think what we're going to do is let him have everything he wants, and let's see where he goes. And that's what happened. I had everything I wanted, and it ended up being nothing. And until I opened up... Well, what happened was I was checking the internet news before I went to work, and I saw this thing about the Left Behind series of books
mm-hmm.
with Tim LaHaye, and I started looking into that, and it was like what it would look like if Jesus came back in our lifetime, and what that would look like if there was a rapture, for instance. And I went, well, he'd rapture me. I mean, we throw money in the plate, you know, we give to nonprofits. I mean,
mm-hmm.
and I started reading that. And it started quoting the Bible in there, and I went, is that real? You know, so I blew the dust off a Bible, and I was looking up these, you know, their quotes, and they weren't word for word, but they were close. And then it dawned on me, it's like, maybe you should be reading this, Brig. And so I started reading the Bible, starting in John, and worked my way that way, and then back around again through the Old Testament. And it opened my eyes to a relationship with Jesus Christ. And it absolutely changed my life. And I'm not talking about overnight. That's a movie, okay? That's not real. It took about a year to get through it and to all of a sudden look at it and then look back in your life, look in your past, and you can see, oh, my gosh, God was there. He was there here, here, and here, and here. And I never knew it, you know? And then I finally realized that he absolutely loves me.
Right.
And his son, Jesus Christ, died for me, an absolute sinner. And, you know, I just took him for granted for so long, but he still was there waiting for me. And when I felt loved, and I want your listeners to hear this, because this is huge, I started loving myself, not out of ego, but out of what God did. He made me. And because God made me, I love myself. God does, and that's the same for all your listeners. And another thing, your listeners, just really understand this. Not a cradle Catholic. You know, I'm not a cradle Christian. This mm-hmm. happened all when I was like 25, 30 years old. So I know what it's like not to have Christ in my life and then what it's like to have. And when you've never had it and then you had it, you will never go back.
Right.
And then you start running into people and you're going like, oh, you don't know it. You don't know what you don't know. And then there's even cradle Catholics that don't know what they have.
Yep.
You know, we've got 200 million Catholics in the United States. Only 20% of them even go to Mass once a week. And it's like, you don't know what you have. And that's what I go and I talk to Legatus about. And that's where I talk. I talk to a lot of Catholics, a lot of Christians about, oh, man, go deeper in your faith. Go the whole 10 yards and watch what it does in your personal life and watch what it does in your business. That really, the book towards the end really gets into that.
Yeah. And I recall reading that point where you're going through this interior turmoil of spiritual conflict. You read that Left Behind series about that plane and the seeming rapture, and you read the story of a pastor who was left behind, and that completely rattled what you thought you had as a kind of secure place in the divine plan.
Yes. Yes, and it was very eye-opening for me, and it was funny because people would go look at me and go, oh, this, you know, especially, and you're going to lose some friends. I had some friends that, you know, that were of this world, and I was of this world, and then they're like, what happened to you, you know, and it's like, I found myself, I found my real self.
Yeah.
And so when you do go through what I had to go through, and I'll even say this, if you are a cradle Catholic that has never dove into your faith like you should, Catholics around you will notice that. They'll notice a change in you because you are really putting your chips to Christ and not of this world. You can't sit on the fence of one leg in this world and one leg towards Christ.
Right.
He is, you have to, you're going to be on one side or the other. And I chose to go to the other side, to Christ. And I gained some friends, and I lost some. And it's like, and what you do when you try to hold on to everything, you disrespect your faith when you're trying to be friends with everybody. It just, it doesn't work. And those are some of the tough parts, decisions that are well worth, it's worth the loss of those friends, but we have to come to grips with that. You can't be loved by everybody. And I would rather be on the faith side of that.
Yep. And, you know, that's not only an outstanding exhortation. It's actually factual that a true encounter with Jesus Christ by a person who daily wants to fall deeper into love of Christ and to pursue him, literally when it comes to relationships, only one of two things will happen. Either people will get turned off by the sudden change in your life, or people will get attracted. But the one thing that will never remain is that you and other people will be lukewarm. That's just impossible. And that's what happened to you.
Right. Yeah, that's a great, great way of putting it. And you are right. There are some people that, man, I like how you change, Brig. There are those. And some of those relationships have gotten stronger. Mm-hmm. So it's not they all walk away. But some of them just can't wrap their arms around it. But the funny part is like, for those, what really threw a knuckleball for a lot of those people that didn't want to like me, that wanted to be about this world, this business under God grew to the largest moving franchise in the world.
Mm-hmm.
We had, if you lined up, we sold the business 2 years ago. But when we sold the business, we had, if you lined up our moving trucks, from bumper to bumper, there'd be an unbroken line of over 25 miles long.
Mm.
Think about that. It's almost as long as a Boston Marathon. We had 10,000 employees. We were doing, we did 650,000 moves in 1 year. All from what? All from a 66 Ford pickup truck. And what I tell people is when they hear God about dividing out the loaves and the fish, they think it's a fable. Look at two young kids, what they did with a 66 Ford pickup truck.
You know, Brig, this was truly enjoyable. Thank you for joining us. I've been talking to Brig Sorba, one of the members of the founding family of Two Men and a Truck. He quickly became its president and CEO, and today spends his life devoted to his Catholic faith and proclaiming the truth of Jesus Christ. I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the Afternoon.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
Most experts don't think like you do. Go to the computer. Type in child, self-esteem, search. Last time I looked, 31 million options. The experts believe self-esteem is the preeminent moral virtue. Type in child, humility, search. Crickets. Why? When was the last time you heard a secular expert talk about humility? But that's at the very core of the virtues we want to teach our children. Always remember one thing. When an expert tells you how to raise your child, you have to ask a question. Is this expert of the same worldview that I am? Does he or she value the same virtues I want to impart to my children?
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at stanthonyservices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon, rounding off the national hour of today's program. Pope Leo XIII, in talking about the role of the father in the family, especially today being the feast day of St. Joseph the Worker, he says this, that a family is in fact the cell of a society. It is a true society. It is governed by an authority peculiar to itself, and that is the authority of the father. And there are limits to the rights of the state when it comes to the governance of the family. The family must necessarily have rights and duties which are prior to those of the community and founded more immediately in nature and then from nature to the level of grace as well, theologically. And if we understand this, then we understand that societies are nothing more than families entering into association and fellowship with each other. So in other words, in the spirit of St. Joseph, work to build family life.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.